Everybody gets the visibility of seeing us do something awesome for about 60 to 90 minutes, and then they don't see the other 90% of the time as a fighter pilot and how kind of how you live the life. Again, very similar to sports. You might take 10,000 shots for the last second shot of the game, and everybody sees that shot, but you don't see the behind the scenes, the hours and days you spend, preparation and time you put into it, and the sacrifice from family and all those things.
Your job matters. It doesn't matter what you do on the base, what your AFSC is. You will play a critical role in everybody's lives as they go about their business, also trying to put those airplanes in the air.
At the end of the day, there's a little bit of skill in it, but I think it really comes down to mentality. You have to be sharp and focused mentally every day that you go out there. And if you do that, I've not seen many people fail when they keep a strong mental attitude when they approach flying.
Welcome back, Black Snakes, to another Drill Weekend. Your host today, Senior Master Sergeant Leslie Kaiser, Maintenance First Sergeant. And on air with us, we have two fighter pilots to really give us a bird's eye view. Lieutenant Colonel Jeremy Stoner and Captain Colby Scott. Welcome, and thank you so much for your time today and this interview. And so, Colonel Stoner, if I can just kick it over to you, tell us a little bit about yourself and how I convinced you to do another podcast.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me for a second time. It's awesome to be here talking to the Black Snakes and everybody else listening in right now. We definitely all want to share our story and kind of get the good word out there about what the wing and the squadron do. So we appreciate being back here. I am a third-generation guardsman. I've been in the Air Guard now for 23 years. My family has about 89 years of combined service, so three generations, like I said, and been consecutively serving since 1956, which is pretty cool. I grew up around jets, so I knew from the time I was three that being a fighter pilot was what I wanted to do, and I'm pretty blessed that I've actually achieved that goal. I think that it's a pretty rare opportunity for somebody to identify something that young and actually make it happen, so I consider myself pretty lucky. Happy to be here talking about this kind of stuff, and I'm excited to see what else we can bring up.
That's crazy. Three generations. I'm a third generation too. A lot of people don't know that. What about you, Captain Scott?
Yeah, first, thanks a lot for having me today. Same thing, three generations as well. Started actually with my dad's uncle. He was a pilot. He went through Vance. My dad, same thing, pilot, went through Vance. And I was, you know, 40 years later going through Vance as well. That's a pilot training base for those that didn't know. So combined, it's been about 60, 70 years of service as well. All pilots. I was the first fighter pilot in the group. Other than that, I didn't always want to be a pilot. It was just kind of something I thought about. I know I always wanted to serve. When I was 10 or 11 is when my dad came home from one of the deployments just post 9/11. And one of those memories that kind of stuck with me throughout my life was seeing him come out the C-130. That's what he was flying at the time, when me and my brothers and my mom were all waiting for him. And it was at that moment I knew I wanted to serve. I just didn't know what capacity I wanted to do it yet. After college is when I really got into aviation, and then I just made my way eventually to the Black Snakes. So that's the road I took to become a fighter pilot. Unlike Lieutenant Colonel Stoner, I didn't exactly know that's what I wanted until I was a little bit older in life. But once I found that road, I kind of went after it with all I had.
So combined experience, 35 years, and we're third generation serving. I think that is something to be said. So I have to ask, like, is it cool to be a pilot? Like, I'm just going to kick it off with what I want to ask first. Is it cool being a pilot?
Yeah, absolutely. It's got to be one of the coolest jobs ever. Like I said, I feel really lucky to be here, and you know, I'm pretty proud of the accomplishment to make it to this point. But yes, being a fighter pilot is awesome. There are times when, you know, I can't believe that I get paid to do this. I love it.
I think the exact same thing. I love it. I come from a sports background, and that kind of falls right into place with being in a fighter squadron. To me, it's not so much, it could be any plane, kind of like we've gone through a plane conversion, but it's the kind of the squadron and the people you work with every day that really makes the job important to me and why I continue to do it, especially why I continue to do it here at the Black Snakes.
Is there a way you can help us understand and give us that view, what we think you do as people that don't fly and what you actually do, like that little reality check?
So outside of drinking beer and eating coffee and eating popcorn, that kind of thing?
Yes.
Okay, so everybody sees us do that, which is awesome.
And give maintenance a hard time. I just have to.
Yeah, give maintenance a hard time. That's all part of it. That is part of the job for sure. I think it's in the description when you sign on the bottom line. I think that that's a great question, because there's so much that goes on behind the scenes for us because of the classified environment we work in and where we conduct most of our briefs and debriefs. People don't really see what's actually going on. I feel like maybe there's a perception that we just kind of show up to the ops desk and check the weather, and then a couple of dudes are like, hey, do you want to go fly? Yeah, let's go fly these jets that they have available, and we'll just kind of rip around Indiana and have some fun. And we do rip around Indiana and have some fun. But behind the scenes, you know, you show up probably 3 hours before you're going to fly. You do some mission planning for a little while, which is pretty intensive on some of the computer systems that we have, and loading data into the jet to prepare for the flight. And then you brief for a solid hour with whoever you're going to fly with that day. And that's all scheduled well in advance so that we can knock out specific training requirements or do upgrades. We have an instructor, a pilot flying with a student, and those kinds of things are very well planned out. That 1 hour brief is very detailed about what your objectives are for the day, what you're going to accomplish, exactly how you're going to do it, where you're going to do it, and all those kinds of things. And then you walk down to AFE and put all your gear on, hike out to the jet, fly for an hour and a half. And then when we come back, we have to download all the data that the airplane can store for us so that we can debrief. And then those debriefs generally take a minimum of an hour, sometimes up to 3 hours, depending on what you are doing, whether or not it's an upgrade ride or an evaluation. So there's 6 to 7 hours worth of your day just invested in that 1.5 hour sortie. And I would say the good majority of it goes unnoticed by everybody else. So while we do get to go out and have a great time and do some really fun things, there's a lot of work that goes into it, I think is...
Yeah, I think you definitely hit the nail on the head. Everybody gets the visibility of seeing us do something awesome for about 60 to 90 minutes, and then they don't see the other 90% of the time as a fighter pilot and how you live the life. Again, very similar to sports. You might take 10,000 shots for the last second shot of the game, and everybody sees that shot, but you don't see the behind the scenes, the hours and the hours and days you spend, preparation and time you put into it, and the sacrifice from family and all those things. And so I think sometimes that's lost in the visibility of what we do, because what we do, that highlight, that pinnacle of flying, is so awesome. And there's just so much, as I said, visibility to everybody else on base. But there's so much time and effort that goes into it to make sure that we're, one, being tactically relevant, and also, two, being safe while we're doing those operations flying. Because at the end of the day, if we're not being relevant tactically and safe, we're going to end up missing our mark. And potentially there'd be a fault on us, and it hurt us at the end of the day, and that could lead to us not having a fighter mission anymore.
You ever get nervous to fly, or does it change throughout the years?
Yeah, I think as you fly more often, you build confidence. You build, a little more ability and trust in your abilities. I think that, I know that the first couple of times I flew the A-10, it's just a single-seat airplane. There's no two-seat models out there. You have to really work hard and focus. And when you walk out there the first couple of times, you have to know that you're ready to go, because it's intimidating to strap on a multi-million dollar jet with no one else in it and go, yeah, I'm ready to do this. It's going to be great.
I'm left to my own devices.
So, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, there's definitely some nerves, and I think that's good most of the time, too. It shows that you're engaged and you're serious, and, you put the effort in that you need to be trusted with an asset like that.
Yeah, I think the same thing. There's definitely a lot of nerves at the very beginning, especially going through pilot training and the fear of elimination and, getting through the training programs. And then as you start rolling into it and getting more sorties, getting more hours under your belt, you kind of lose that nervousness, at least in my perspective, over time. Until something happens, 500, 700 hour mark, and then you scare yourself one more time just because you're being maybe a little complacent, and you're like, okay, time to bring it back in. You get maybe make yourself a little bit nervous one or two times, and then really, really kind of nail down on your things that you do leading up to a flight, like briefing, debriefing, and then making sure you're executing correctly. And in my opinion, I think the nerves go away over time if you're always staying consistent with that process of preparation and debrief.
So, Captain Scott, you mentioned on one of the questions I had, how typical does the training look like for you guys? And you also alluded to elimination during the training. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, so the timeline to get through UPT, the pilot training process, is somewhere in between 12 and 18 months, depending on the track. So being a fighter track, it's going to be about 12 months of pilot training, and then a couple more at IFF, the lead into fighters, and then about another year or so at the basic course for the F-16 now. So all in all, about 2.5 years to get through that whole process. In that process, you have to consistently be executing and flying well enough to continue to progress with the rest of the class. And like even in my situation, I got to a point where I had, we call them hooking or failing rides. I had hooked a couple of rides. And I think the biggest piece on that is to not let that create a snowball effect in your mind or doubt yourself, and to continue to push forward and just do the things that you had been doing up to that point. Really engage in the preparation of those flights and kind of let it just roll off your back when you have those issues. The elimination process in pilot training can be really scary when you're going through it, because you're like, I could have one flight today that's bad and that could be it, and then my career's over and I have to move on and go do something else. And it's got to be like a just like roll on to the next thing, like let it go past your mind, and then just do as well as you can on that sortie, go on to the next one, and just kind of clear it mentally. There are a lot of people that kind of struggle in that process, but if you use kind of teamwork and getting through those schools, I guess, with the class that you're in, because everybody's going through that same grind, it makes it a lot easier, and you can kind of rely on other people, and that's kind of where you build that like fighter pilot squadron mentality.
Is that training also to help realize this, what the severity could be? You get one shot, because that could be your one shot, and then something fatal could happen or a mishap?
I would say yes, because every day you're going to go out there and you need to make sure that you're executing safely every single day. And those programs are built in a way that they will eliminate pilots if you're not acting safe. But there is some skill behind it as well. We kind of joke around with the squadron that we can teach like any monkey how to fly a plane. Like, just,
are you saying I can learn how to fly?
We can teach anybody how to fly is what we say. But at the end of the day, there's a little bit of skill in it, but I think it really comes down to mentality. You have to be sharp and focused mentally every day that you go out there. And if you do that, I've not seen many people fail when they keep a strong mental attitude when they approach flying.
How do you work up or get to that strong mental attitude?
I personally have always thought that that's something you're kind of born with. People just have it or they don't. It's kind of a mentality. I believe you can work on it. But I think everybody that wears a uniform has that mentality in some sort of capacity. So maybe you just need to kind of sharpen that part of your mind and going into those programs. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's kind of lean back on your other experiences in life where you may have been successful. And if not, really the group or the class that you're with, kind of like the fighter pilot mentality with the squadron, like lean on your friends, lean on the people around you to get yourself through.
I like that teamwork aspect. Yep. Do you have any thoughts on that, Colonel Stoner?
Yeah, I love it. I think Colby's spot on. There's definitely, to get into this business in the first place, you've got to have an attitude to just, even be selected for one of these positions, and then to start pushing through pilot training. It's definitely, they'll weed you out right away if this wasn't something that you really desired to do. And I think most of us have the desire needed to push through and make this kind of thing happen.
Yeah. So how fast are you guys really going?
That's a great question. When
What's
are we
the
talking?
Radar say?
We can go, there's times when you go a little slower, and there's times you can go pretty quickly too. You can go at certain places in the MOA, you can go past Mach 1 at the speed of sound. And there's other places where you can't do that. So for the most part, we're not going that fast. Okay. For just a general reference, we could call it 400 to 500 miles per hour. But that'll be specifically in air-to-air fighting.
Yeah, wow. So it's pretty quick.
Yeah, and how does your body handle that?
Oh, it's kind of funny, because a lot of people think it's the speed. It's not really so much the speed, but it's the turning. So if you're just going 400 miles an hour and just like on a normal commercial plane, you don't really notice it unless you aggressively turn the aircraft and start pulling hard on it. So that's when the G will start affecting you pretty dramatically, especially the faster you are and the harder you pull the jet around.
So when we're flying commercial, we're going 400 miles an hour?
In some cases, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Okay. I do like to go fast. Do you feel like the G-suits help when you're pulling that many Gs?
Most definitely, yeah. Yeah, the huge help for the G-suit, especially for someone with long limbs like I have. It pushes the blood right back to your brain, you know.
Are we going to start doing incentive flights?
At some point, there will be an incentive flight program. It's a little ways off right now, because we really want to make sure that the pilots are getting all the training that they need first before we get into some of the just additional stuff. We certainly have the unique ability now with a two-seater to be able to share that fighter pilot experience with the rest of the base, and I think that's important.
I had to throw it in there. I mean, that was my little sneak attack question. I had to throw it in there secretly because I might want one. But what do you wish as a pilot you had to make your life easier? And if you have any patent pendings, just say, pass that question.
So I've had the ability to look over some of the DEOC surveys, and I get to interact with a lot of the commanders. And I feel like in my position, I agree with almost everybody across the base right now that our lives would be easier if we had more time to focus on what's relevant at work and doing our AFSC and getting really good at our jobs. And there are some efforts underway right now to revamp what drill schedules look like and take care of a few other priorities with our scheduling practices so that we can start finding more time, and not just finding it, but dedicating more time to doing our job. We all have so many extraneous responsibilities that aren't related to turning wrenches on an airplane, flying an airplane, loading weapons, taking care of things over in services with the kitchen and feeding our people the way they need to be fed when we're at work. Every job on the base is geared toward putting an airplane in the air, and we all need time to focus on that job because that truly is our mission and what we need to do. So I'm hoping in the future through work with Chief Hoop and a Tiger team, we can get to a point where we move all of those additional responsibilities and actions to a logical time that can be condensed, and then we can spend a more significant amount of time getting really good at what we're supposed to be doing.
It's nice to know that DEOC, that people are being heard with those surveys and results. Is there any patents you have out there pending that you want something different as a pilot?
No, I think you said it perfectly well. The only thing I wish is I had the A-10 cockpit back. But other than that, no, that's about it.
Nice. What's your favorite, coolest, or most unique aircraft you've gotten to fly, and why?
My experience has been fairly limited. I did pilot training, so I got to fly, the T-37, which was pretty cool. That was phased out probably well before Colby got to go through training. That was a fun airplane. I got to fly the T-38, which is pretty quick and agile, but I spent 19 years in the A-10. And when you get, that kind of experience and that kind of, in-depth, lifelong hold on something, you really kind of take to it. I dedicated so much of my life to being a good CAS pilot, to being a good forward air controller, to being a Sandy 1 for combat search and rescue. You really learn those mission sets. Your life is kind of molded around those things. So for me, it's the A-10 without a doubt. But that's because I spent the most time there. I got to go downrange and do the actual job multiple times. I have over 700 combat hours, so that is for sure the coolest plane that I've flown, just because I know exactly what it can do and what it's capable of.
I'm currently torn between the two. I was split between the A-10. I came back and had about four and a half, including the training in the A-10, and I loved it. I enjoyed every day of it. I was, as he talked about, going through all the upgrades, positioning myself to continue to be in a role in the squadron where I could go to do more schooling in the A-10 and continue to be kind of what Lieutenant Colonel Stoner was to the guys that would come back after me. And that was all in the A-10, and that is what I had everything poured into and I loved at the time. And when that transition happens and you switch over to the F-16, there's a lot of differences and there's a lot of things to love with that too. And it's just a completely different kind of world when you look at the two different airplanes. The time I had in the A-10, I will cherish forever. It was the best thing that could have happened. I'm going to be kind of one of those F-4 guys from two generations ago that get to look back and say I flew an airplane that's no longer around when the next airplane's sitting on the ramp, or even the airplane after that. And I think that's a great experience, and that's something I'm always going to kind of hold near to my heart. But the F-16 in the future as well, I feel like I'm young enough age-wise, being only in for about 9 years so far, that I switch over and kind of get the mindset around that and re-engage just like I did with the A-10.
Tell us what kind of stories you guys swap over the bars. Like, what do you guys talk about? What do you swap back and forth? What's some of your favorite memories you kick around?
I think most of us like to reflect on, you know, some of the great times that we have doing the JOB. You know, everybody having a beer loves to have a little shop talk. And I think that internally to the fighter squadron, we learn a lot from each other over sharing those stories and experiences. You know, the times that I spent downrange and was, you know, was lucky enough to be a part of is something that he hasn't experienced yet. So anything that I can tell him, even over a beer, even if it's only 10% true sometimes with my heroics, there's still a good culture that we can build, and there's still lessons learned that we can share. And I think that storytelling is very important to what we do as fighter pilots.
Yeah, as we kind of said, I'm rolling into my 10th year, and I've never gone downrange, and I've pretty much spent my whole military career exclusively in training for the most part, between pilot training, one airplane, the next airplane. So it's huge for me as a younger guy in a squadron to be able to talk to the older guys just and get the experiences that they've had. And so I can take those experiences with me in the future, and so that we don't end up being a place or a squadron that hasn't had people with those experiences, or at least heard about them from the guys that mentored them. For the bar talk and joking around and stuff, it really always devolves into stories about deployments, stories about flying with each other, you know, or sports occasionally. But it always comes back around to what happened in this four-ship this one time, or what happened on this deployment. And I know I look forward to making those kind of memories with the guys in the squadron in the future. And I'm just, you know, grateful that I get to hear about them now in my position.
What in storytelling has stuck so far?
For me, I constantly have to hear about everything that has happened on the downrange deployments. And it's just something that I haven't got to build that experience with everybody else in the fighter squadron. And so that stuck with me, that while maybe you don't want to deploy, deploying with the squadron that you train with, that you work with, that you operate with every day to complete this job and complete the mission, you know, the opportunity to actually go with that group, do it at a high level and be successful and come back home, that's what I want to be able to build as well with the people I work with. And I haven't got to yet. Maybe that's down the road for me someday. But I just, with the stories from the older guys, I'll be ready for that experience. I'll be ready for that based off their experiences when it does happen.
I think what sticks with me is when you go TDY, that's when you get to bond with your people. That's the best thing that sticks. You got to go TDY with your people. You got to go on a trip.
Yeah, Colby spent a lot of time talking about the teamwork, and that is extended from pilot training, yep, even from, you know, before pilot training, but all the way through that, all the way through the training that you do in the squadron on a daily basis. And then when you eventually get to perform, you know, on a deployment, it all kind of comes together.
Because the goal is muscle memory.
Is true.
You don't have to think. You can react because your muscles remember what to do. Is there an aircraft you'd love to still get to fly? So we've heard about the A-10, some of the T models. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yep, the Nonner over here. Yep. Uh-huh. Is there some you would still love to get to fly?
Yeah, absolutely. There are tons from the future that I think would be really cool, or tons from the past that I think would be really cool. You know, he mentioned the F-4 earlier. You know, you read a lot of awesome stories about Vietnam and the fighter pilots that were flying F-4s there. Seems like it'd be an amazing plane to check out, take for a spin. You know, the F-100 that flies here in Fort Wayne is the only operational F-100 still in existence. And to get a sortie in that would be like a lifetime
bucket list item.
Yeah, bucket list item for sure. I think that'd be a really fun plane.
For me, I'm perfectly content in the F-16 for now. But yeah, he kind of looked at the past, but looking at the future, I'm, as we kind of mentioned my age a couple times already, at some point in time, I'll probably have to be mentally geared to fly another airplane at this base on the ramp. Other than that, just be the best current F-16 pilot I can be.
From a seasoned pilot to one that's been in training most of the time, how do you guys bridge that gap and help get you ready to be that seasoned pilot?
There's a great evolution of pilots through the squadron, you know, from the time you show up as a lieutenant and you're the snack officer taking care of the bar, you know, doing the things, listening to all the stories, building that experience. And then we eventually work you through all the different upgrades. So you start out as just a wingman, and then eventually you'll be a 2-ship flight lead and a 4-ship flight lead. And then you'll start leading some of the higher end mission sets. You'll become an instructor pilot. You'll take on some of the specialized mission sets. You have the opportunity to go to weapons school, where you can get probably the most top tier training available in the Air Force for a fighter pilot. And so when you go through that natural progression that's built into the fighter squadron, you eventually evolve and start to mentor the people that are starting that train behind you. And I think that's one of the greatest parts of the fighter squadron, is it's not necessarily about the office that you're sitting in or the rank that you have, or whether you're a command pilot or a slick wing. You have the opportunity to mentor the guys that are, you know, younger than you or less experienced, and you can continue that throughout your career. So we do a great job kind of building each other up, developing that culture, and getting everybody to the point where they are experienced and they are comfortable, and then they share those opportunities.
Would you agree, Captain Scott?
Yeah, I totally agree. From that moment that you get the wings on your chest in pilot training, that's a kind of a level of responsibility you're jumping into and accepting that you will grow into those roles as time goes on. And I think one of the fortunate things we get at Fort Wayne currently with the conversion is we've had guys that are going to go through my age or similar through all these upgrades that Colonel Stone talked about, and are going to get completely reset back to square one in a new aircraft and go through all those upgrades again. And so when those guys are in the leadership roles in the future, and the experience that the next generation of young pilots is looking forward to or looking to for guidance, those guys are going to have gone through all those upgrades, reset, gone through upgrades completely again with a whole new plane, a whole new group of instructors. And so that experience level is just going to continue to build over time, especially through the conversion.
We've talked a lot of pilot stuff, aircraft stuff, T models. I don't know how cars got in here in sports. What would a non-pilot find useful from listening to this podcast?
I think one of the things that we talked about a little bit is the mindset and, you know, having some resiliency. When you figure out what it is you want to do and you really set your mind to it, you dedicate yourself to it, I think everybody has the opportunity to achieve their goals and, you know, become the person that they want to be. So I would say that regardless of what you aspire to, if you put in the time, you put in the effort, you work hard, and you use teamwork, that you'll be successful.
How do you do that personally, Colonel Stoner?
It's a lot like Colby said. You know, I have a great group of friends outside of the fighter squadron that I still rely on a lot for all kinds of advice or letting loose and having a good time with, for, you know, calling when things are good and calling when things are bad. Same thing inside the fighter squadron. Everybody has their, you know, kind of group of friends. And that teamwork piece is just vital. You know, if you're in an organization where everybody's dedicated and everybody's working hard, you know, it makes it a lot easier to be successful as a team than it is to try to do all of that on your own.
Your team keeps raising the bar on you too, so you may as well catch up.
That's right, yeah.
What about you, Captain Scott?
I think something to kind of hold of importance for everybody on base that's a pilot or non-pilot is every small piece that goes into every job on base goes into successfully getting those jets off the ground and to go execute the mission and come back home safely. So no matter what it is, no matter what you're doing in regards to your job on base, everything on the base is serving a purpose to get those airplanes to do the job. And I think it's important to see every small piece of that, from making sure the maintainer is turning the wrench right to that maintainer is getting paid through finance right. Everything works to allow those jets to execute the job, and that's something that we all need to kind of hone in on. And pilots, it's easiest for the pilots because they're the one that get to fly the plane, and I think it's hardest for those individuals that aren't actually flying the plane, that are on the ground, that just get to watch us take off and go do whatever it is that they think we may do. And that the mentality needs to be, we're all in it together and we're all getting those planes to where they need to go.
Yeah.
Chief Hoop likes to, you know, kind of have that discussion with everybody around base, and he does an awesome job mentoring everybody toward not accepting failure and getting after it and, you know, being a part of getting those airplanes in the air. And one of the examples he always gives is, you know, talking about being a services guy, and how, you know, if you are over there serving lunch to everybody and you undercook the chicken, that's going to have a pretty big impact on the guys turning wrenches and the guys that are going to go fly, or even the people, you know, signing paperwork to make it all legal. Your job matters. It doesn't matter what you do on the base, what your AFSC is. You will play a critical role in everybody's lives as they go about their business, also trying to put those airplanes in the air. So Colby's got a great point there.
That was a really good point. It goes into that bird's eye view that we kind of got kicked off with. What do you see different from the sky versus what you see from the ground?
I think one of the coolest parts about being a pilot for me is getting a break from the office. You know, when you take off and get to look at things from a completely different perspective, and, you know, get some fresh air, and
go fast.
Go upside down, right? Like, look at things three-dimensionally instead of just kind of glued to the surface. It does make a big difference. It does change your perspective. And for me, I don't do well just sitting for very long. I'm fidgeting as we talk right now. So I do need to get out and physically be doing things. So, you know, taking off and looking at things from another angle is always the best part of my day.
What about you, Captain Scott?
In some facet to it, there's like a selfishness component of it where you can just block everything else out, emails, everything else that's going on in your life, and you have 90 minutes to where you are just flying the airplane and going out to do the mission that you're doing. And so it's kind of like a piece of everything else is turned off in my life for 90 minutes. This is all I'm doing. This is all I care about. And everything else is kind of just toned down. I would say that is probably the piece that everybody else on base maybe doesn't get to experience. And it's just something kind of surreal. And I'm glad I get to do that, you know, sometimes on a daily basis, and just go out there and fly those planes and then come back home. And then grateful for the opportunity to do that, because it's something that I wish everybody could experience. I think in some way everybody gets a little bit of that in their life with something, but I'm just glad I get that opportunity to go fly those planes for about an hour a day.
Yeah, that's why normally you won't find me in my office unless I have to do a report or some slideshow. Otherwise, I'm out. So we heard from Colonel Wagner in the Change of Command episode, and he doesn't know what he wants to do next. Maybe after he grows up or not, I'm not sure. But next, after the uniform, is he just going to be a normal pilot? Do you guys, when you're not flying, what else do you do, or what do you want to do next?
I'm going to be part-time here soon. So in January, I head back to Delta Airlines and will be a civilian pilot, which will be a great change of pace. It's a lot different than what we do out here on a normal basis. So that'll be my kind of grown-up job moving forward. And then, you know, there's a lot more to life than just flying too, though. So, you know, getting to eventually retire from the military, as I'm much older than Colby is, and moving on to other things. Hopefully that means riding my mountain bike a little bit more, playing a little more golf. Colby and I have won a few pretty nice golf tournaments in our time.
Nice.
So, you know, kind of getting after some of the post-military, a little more relaxed lifestyle in a few years when I'm ready to slow down.
Very similar. I mean, that's just the pretty generic route that you go, because you have all the skills, and just put those skills to use for the next 20 years, because you finished 20-year career, and now you got another one right in front of you if you want it, or if you so choose to do that. But I don't know. I just bought a acreage in Oklahoma, so I might raise horses or something with my wife. Who knows?
Yeah,
who knows what the future has?
Yeah. Well, help Colonel Wagner figure it out, because we still need him around. Is there any pilot wisdom, or just wisdom, you'd like to leave with someone today listening that is interested in the military or being a pilot?
Absolutely. I would say, you know, if you're interested in the military or being a pilot, just come out to the base and check things out. We have an awesome recruiting team, and I think they've evolved in recent years to really get away from being someone that younger people are intimidated by or told, you know, not to sign anything with, to really being mentors, to have the ability to explain exactly what goes on at the base, show you what kind of opportunities we might have, show you what kind of bonuses and incentives there are before there's any pressure for you to sign a piece of paper saying this is what you want to do. Come out and check out the air show this summer. In July, we're going to have an awesome air show free to the public that will be amazing. And if you think you're interested in the military or aviation, it's a great place just to meet like-minded people and see some great things, meet some of the military members that will be out there working, and kind of see the day-to-day that goes on behind the scenes, inside the wire, as they say.
I think specifically towards people that want to become a pilot, especially a fighter pilot here at the Black Snakes, don't play keep a secret. Like, come meet the pilots, talk to the pilots often, let them know your intentions. Don't make it some taboo thing you keep to yourself, or you don't want to say anything, be made fun of or something like that, because if there's where there's a will, there's a way most of the time. And the key is really not just turn in a resume and hope, because that really won't get it done. You need to go and talk to the pilots, talk face to face, let your intentions be known, and say, you know, this is what I'm doing. What do you think I can be doing better? What do you think I need to do to make an interview board? Those kind of things, because I think everybody at the base, if they put their mind to it, can have the opportunity to join the fighter squadron as well and become a pilot. They just need to progress and do the things that they need to do, and kind of take a step back from that kind of the digital age of just turn in a resume and hope, and like come talk to the people face to face, as we kind of talk about all the time. See how the teamwork dynamic is, and show that you can be part of a team. I think anybody that wants to have an opportunity to come over and talk to pilots, you know, there's always those opportunities, and I think they should take the time to do that. Always let your intentions be known is my kind of go stick home, go home point.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Any last words you want to say to the team?
No, again, I appreciate the opportunity to be here talking about this. It feels pretty selfish to just focus on fighter pilot things, but I hope we shed a little bit of light on what that job actually looks like. And you guys are doing a phenomenal job getting out to all the different shops around base, so everybody has the opportunity to share. So thanks for letting us be a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. I 100% agree. I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk. And then I just hope that it kind of resonates with everybody that, you know, this is one large family and team that everybody needs to, you know, talk to each other, get around, hang around with each other, and, you know, I kind of figure out everybody on a first last name basis, and yep. not just some random person that works in some random shop. Like, I think that's key to success at the Black Snakes.
Well, what do we do? Share a few emails, and now we go way back all of like 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
See, it's fine.
Exactly.
Well, thank you both for your time today. Huge shout out to NEI, Callie and Hannah, for helping us out and using their studio. Also, a special shout out to Solomon at Leo Junior Senior High School for helping with some of the questions. Black Snakes, please share the show. Subscribe, like, leave a review. We want this to be the fastest growing military podcast out there, and it's because of people like you.
Storm Hell.
Storm Hell.
This is the official podcast of the 122nd Fighter Wing. Views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of the 122nd Fighter Wing, Air National Guard, or United States government. No endorsement of any person or business is ever intended.